This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. Hello and welcome to Beyond Performance, where we have candid conversations with high-performing people from all walks of life and distill actionable lessons we can take away to perform a little bit better every single day. I'm your host, Dana Bluen, and today, for International Day of Education, I speak with Troy Anatotai, the founder and CEO of English language edtech company, Globish. Here in the first part, we discuss Troy's background and how passion for making the world a better place turned him from a film student into an entrepreneur who would go on to become the CEO of a successful edtech company. Let's get into it. Troy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I'm really excited to talk to you specifically about education and the business of education. So thanks for coming by.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Anytime, brother. So I want to start out just by some of your background, because you're a tech company CEO, an ed tech company CEO, but that wasn't always your vision. That wasn't always your dream. You had much different aspirations for yourself, right?
Yep. Well, I always think that I come from a very fortunate family, and I never want to take things for granted. So I always feel like I want to make a difference.
Okay.
Just to make me valuable. And when I was little, I think what I feel the difference is when I in the movie cinema.
Mm.
Yep, that's when I think like my soul, my brain, my feeling can be transformed.
Yeah.
So I always want to be a movie director.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that you did go to film school too, right?
Yeah. I did.
And I know that you did a few projects in film.
Yeah.
But what kind of started to pull you away from that life? Because that was your passion for so long.
Yeah. I love film so much. I had my project until I realized that it's not about your creativity. It's not always about, you know, like how good you are with the screenwriting.
Yep.
But it could be about leadership. It could be about teamwork.
Mm.
It could be about, you know, how much you understand the market, this and that. So I went to my lecturer. He's more like my advisor at the university. And I asked him like, you know, I struggle a lot with my team crew. And then I had problem producing a next movie.
Mm.
I kind of lost in my ideas because I think I already put all my idea in my last project already.
Yeah.
And the team didn't work out well. You know, and he taught me that, you know, Troy, making a best movie is all about, you know, how much you understand people, how much you understand the world. Yeah. So he said, if you're not ready for that, then go see the world, go see more people.
Huh.
And then eventually you're going to, your brain gonna be craft little by little and then to be a diamond.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what he told me. Yeah.
So did you go see the world?
A lot. So instead of, you know, I always imagined that I wanted to be on, you know, on top class of the global stage when I'm in a university, and I thought I'm gonna go, you know, get the Cannes Award.
Yeah.
But I end up being the president of a student organization that allowed me to travel over like 15 countries.
Wow.
To represent Thailand as a global volunteer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what kind of volunteering? Like, where'd you go? What did you see? What did you do?
So I was in an organization called ISEC. Yeah. What ISEC does is that we believe that, you know, if people are all friends, then there wouldn't be a World War III.
Mm.
So each country has its own problem, and we send volunteers to solve that problem. Yeah, for example, Thailand has a lot of problem on education, on we have a lot of problem on like on harassment, on, you know, child abuse as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought in a lot of, you know, volunteer to you know, kind of like build an environment for students over the summer, not to be locked it in the what we call it as the protected foundation, but to allow them to have more creativity with their activities. And also most of the volunteer went out to the rural areas, like, you know, Buriram, Nakhon Phanom, Ayutthaya, and teach English to the school that's not very fortunate.
Okay, so, and where else did you go outside of Thailand? Because you said you traveled to 15 countries. Like, what were some of the interesting places you saw?
Well, every place is interesting. I like Hungary a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, in terms of like the scenic, you know, like it's the best. And I like Cambodia a lot.
Really?
Because people are like the top student are very, very smart.
Mm.
You know, when you're in Thailand, you think that, you know, Cambodia is behind you.
Yeah.
But when you go to talk to the student, you know, they way, you know, above you actually in terms of, you know, their level of education.
It's true. I've worked with some high-level PhD and master students from Cambodia. Very, very intelligent individuals.
Yeah. And then Russia is nice. Went to India twice. And Wales, Malaysia, Philippines, China.
What were some of the social issues that you saw around education that in those different areas?
Well, every country's education problem, for my experience, it does not very tangible in the first world countries. But in third world countries, there's always a problem with accessibilities and qualities. It's always, you know, a top two problems.
Accessibility, quality.
Yeah.
So people or kids, children, or even adults being able to access education, and then quality in both teachers, training, and the access to information and materials.
Yep. Yep. Nowadays, access it to information and materials, it's not like a key issue, but it still remain, you know, the guidance of that education.
Yeah, the internet has definitely changed quite a bit of that.
Yep.
So how did you, was it during this time as a volunteer working as a student that you got to start to become interested in the education technology space, or did it happen after? When did that kind of seed get planted in your head?
So, first it's all about wanting to make movies. Mm-hmm. Then it's all about, you know, I want to, you know, like prep myself with my leadership, with my management, with, you know, how much I know about the world before going back to do the movies.
Yeah.
But then one thing I realized that when I said my soul was transform when I was little, I think I think I was in primary school when I get to see Finding Nemo, and it changed my whole life.
I think I was already out of university when Finding Nemo came out.
Yeah, it's so at a certain point, looking back, it actually educated me. It gave me a life reflection, because my father is kind of like a Nemo father. How much I wanted to see the world, just like me getting to see the world, you know, wanted to see the world. So at a certain point, it gives me the aspect of actually, you know, education itself is a subset of the movie I want to do. So I want to change people's life. It's just that movie, it's very, very indirect. But it could, you know, grab more audience for sure, because it's fun and such. But when doing education, it's also as much as valuable for me as, you know, making movies. Yeah, I realized that when I started the business and I started to get feedback that it changed people's life, that's when I started to realize, man, this is what exactly I want to hear if people watch my movie as well.
You kind of had this realization that, oh, I can have the impact I wanted, not through movies, but through touching people by education.
Yeah. Yeah. Not through movies, but also movies and also education.
Well, you guys are actually quite deep in the media space, and we're going to get into that, what you guys do with media in your business. We're going to jump over to a quick break, Troy. When we get back, I want to jump into the business of education and how you help people perform better in life and in business through your company.
Lovely, thank you.
Coming up after the break, Troy talks about the challenges of starting an edtech company, building a successful business model in a competitive landscape, and leaves our listeners with his advice if you want to enter the edtech space yourself. You're listening to 89.9, The Business Station.
Billions from me. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
We're back with Troy Anototai. He's the CEO of Globish, an edtech company based in Bangkok, Thailand, that is changing the landscape of English language learning for people, not just in Thailand, but I know Troy has international plans for expansion this year. Troy, thanks again for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, I want to talk to you about the business of teaching English, the business of education.
Yep.
And one of the things, you've built an incredible platform as a company for yep. Globish. You explain what it is you guys do. I don't want to butcher the description of the company, but explain what it is Globish does to the listener.
Thank you. So, Thai people learn English for 12 years, but if you ever come to Thailand, you know it. Yeah.
Well, Thailand has the lowest English proficiency in Southeast Asia, right?
We're a bit above Laos, but yeah, you can say we are the lowest. We learn a lot of English actually more than 12 years, but if you ask Thai to do writing, they're fine. The grammar is quite good.
Mm.
If you ask them to read, they can grab, you know, like the content.
Mm.
Listening, not so good. But speaking, you can forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah. People, it's a lot of issue in speaking English in Thailand.
Well, and also Thai is to contrast the two languages, Thai is tonal.
Yep.
And it has a lot of sounds yep. that English doesn't have. English is yep. not tonal yep. and is grammatically is horrible.
Yep, that's right. And we are not familiar with English at all. Every channel we watch, it's mostly Thai.
Yeah. You know?
Also, the alphabet as well, like it's Vietnamese and Indonesian, Philippines, you know, they all have like English alphabet. We don't have it. So yeah, there's a lot of reason behind, you know, that we are not familiar with English. And when it comes to speak English, context-wise itself, Thai people do not want to lose their face.
Mm.
So it's a big problem here, and we see that, you know, by the traditional way of solving problem, it's not going anywhere. Like people going to the big class, and you know, you travel a lot to, you know, to the middle of the city, and then you sit for 1 hour and you get to speak for 10 minutes because there's like 20 people in the class. And when you go back home, you want to learn some e-learning, and you're just tired, and it's very boring because there's no one guiding you, no one motivating you, no one correcting you when you're wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what Globish does is, you know, we don't let people, you know, going to the big class by offering the one-on-one coaching English to your mobile phone, to your laptop, to anywhere with the device with internet. You get to book the teachers or we call them coach 24/7.
Yeah,
we have a coach around the world, and then we also have extra video like email writing, right, grammar, or like TED talk for you to practice during the weeks as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that really changed because And I'm familiar with the edtech landscape in Thailand. Yep. A lot of people mess up the platform. They don't get it right. They don't understand it. You guys nailed it, and you were one of the first. Like, what allowed you to sort of come in and say, this is what people want. We understand that. We can build it. How did you know?
Well, I think there's several factors there. I would say one factor is timing. The other factor is the cycle of product developments that allow us to win the market. Timing itself, like we start 5 years ago when we only had 3G.
Yeah.
And it's a bad timing. Yeah. Every 10 class, three classes have problem. And so there's a lot of competition over there, but then it's hard to survive. And also back then, I mean, Thailand is not as much as open to the global competition as up until now, and the economy is not as bad as now.
Yeah.
So whenever economy starts going back, people start to develop themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. This. So right now it's kind of a good timing. Yeah. That's why other people mess up before because they don't stay long enough.
Yeah.
And another thing is the product development. When in the beginning our offering is the cheapest cost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then we find out that when it's cheap, people don't value it. We have a very low rate of completion when we sell, you know, a cheap cost.
No skin in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody try to make it cheaper, and then like the companies doesn't realize that this is not the best way to go, because then people would not refer you to the friends if they do not finish the course.
Yeah.
So we change our values to not just a marketplace that, you know, you can spend the least money, but more like a premium course.
Yeah.
That we train our own teachers. We build our own curriculum. We actually build our own video platform.
Yeah.
We build our own CIM that allows that every time you change your teacher, and you can change the teacher all the times, the teacher will know, you know, when are you up to which levels. They will see every comment that the teacher comments you before.
Mm.
And also we have a rating that the teacher can rate the student can rate the teacher. So it's actually a closed system rather than an open system.
Mm.
And we put a lot of focus on quality, and our pricing is pretty much premium.
So you help people get the best results by giving them the best teachers, the best curriculum, because you make it in-house.
Yeah.
And I've seen your product development over the years. You guys have constantly improved,
yep.
constantly made changes. And I think a lot of people on the outside think Globish is probably this huge, like, conglomerate business. Like, you guys have tons of money behind you.
Yep.
But that's not the case, right?
It's not the case.
And I've been to your office. You guys are... I was at your office when you guys were over on Osoke,
yep.
and 40 people and like two rooms and not a huge team, and you're not much bigger now.
Yep.
And it's interesting to see that you understood where to allocate your resources to create high value so people could get the biggest bump in performance through your product. And I guess most of that was you invested a lot in tech, building your own, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And from where you are today, what were you like? What was the first version like? Like, what would that process look like to get to where you are?
I'm not a tech guy. Like, I'm not from the engineering school. I'm from a school of dream, you know.
Yeah.
So, and my co-founder, she's from the business school. So, we both know how to use Skype. We use Microsoft Excel,
yeah.
and then we use mobile phone, and that's the three software and hardware we use in the beginning, and it's pretty much messed up.
Yeah,
because imagine, you know, every time, you know, the student want to learn, for example, you want to learn English in 9 p.m. on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I need to check every teacher schedule on the Microsoft Excel. Which teacher is free on this time, and then I need to call them. If they don't pick up, I wait until they, and then I'll call the student back again. And if the student wanted to change the schedule the other day, I need to do a calling again.
It sounds horrible.
Yeah, and every time, you know, the class is finished, they need to send me a screenshot of the finished class to me, and then I need to conclude the payroll.
Yeah.
By the end of every month, and I never know, you know, how to, you know, like if they are late, then how should I punish? If they are good, how should I reward? Like, it's pretty, like,
and everything was manual.
Yeah, we struggled for years.
Yeah. And then you look at your platform today, it's probably the most advanced e-learning platform in Asia, in my opinion, in my estimation. And there are, you know, there's other companies out there that just don't get it right. They don't understand it. Or there's, you know, even American companies that, you know, they don't kind of hit the right target. You seem to have found, one, your target audience, and two, the right way to approach them from a business perspective. Like you said, you increased your prices to offer a premium product, and that allowed you to grow the business.
Yep.
But to do that, you had to improve the product, right?
Yep,
the tech
side. That's right. It happened one by one, you know, it's... as easy as it sounds, just that whenever we hear a complaint or a suggestion that become a majority of the complaint and suggestion,
yeah,
within a month or two, it become our next feature.
Mm.
Yeah, that's as easy as it sounds. For example, like in the beginning, people start to say that, hey, like we don't want to just learn with the Philippines people, because you know Philippines is very good in correcting you, but like in making a conversation fun and making the student feel that they are actually talk to foreign, which is mean foreigner in Thai, they want to talk to someone blonde, you know. Mm. So we
blonde hair, blue eyes,
something like that. So we'll start sourcing, you know, like Europeans and then the native, and then we increase the price. And then student said, you know, we are good in front of a laptop, but we don't know if we're going to meet a real person. Are we going to be as good as, you know, when we learn virtually?
Mm.
Then we have a workshop, you know, twice a month, and we start to gathering people and let them meet up.
Yeah.
And then there's a demand say that we want to learn not just with Thai people, but with international student in the class.
Wow.
Yeah. So we start to sourcing, you know, our partners who can host, you know, the global classroom, and the student, our student can do that now as well. Mm. Then they ask that we want to learn email writing, and we don't want to teach, you know, email writing to each individual. So we start to make a series of videos.
Yeah.
Yeah. To teach them. So, you know, each feeder just come from, you know, like complain, you know, suggestion.
You were really kind of applying that empathy to the user and then using an agile development methodology.
Yep.
Really rolling out new features as you needed.
Yep. But this has not come from the book, but it come from we went bankrupt on the second year.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're still around on year five.
Because we didn't pay anyone for 6-7 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. No one at all.
2,000-3,000 baht.
Wow.
Yeah.
For six, so that's how you pulled yourself out of bankruptcy.
Yeah, that when it become kind of family business, because we start to use our family member to run the business before they become, you know, the founding team. Yeah.
A little bit of slave labor.
Yeah, you could.
Indentured servitude. We'll call it indentured servitude.
Yeah. Blood, thicker than water or cash.
Nothing's thicker than cash, my man. So I mean, that's going to be a struggle. And I've been there with my businesses in the past. Yeah. You know, it's very tough, but you came through it.
Yeah, because we went bankrupt, because I'm coming from a very like NGO background, and NGO is all about giving.
So you're just burning cash.
We built something we wanted. We know that people wanted, but we didn't build something that people actually wanted.
Yeah. So something you thought they wanted, not what they actually wanted.
Yeah, something we wanted to give. You can put it that way, yeah.
So you were taking a very non-business approach to business, and it burnt you.
On the first 2 years, yes.
Yeah. And so then you switched to listening to your customers and building what they wanted, rolling out new features constantly.
Yep.
Now, in episode 2 of Beyond Performance, we talked to David Henderson, the CEO of Driver, who's a real advocate for agile development and lean. And he talks in depth about like constantly listening to your customers and developing new features rapidly. And it sounds like that's kind of what you shifted to.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How did you build that feedback loop with your customers?
I think when people talk about startup, they imagine something like you get a lot of fundings and you try to have a smallest team as you could, and you try to make everything automated.
Yeah.
Globish does exactly the opposite.
Mm.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of funding. We try to, you know, raise at the least as we could, mm-hmm. and we use a lot of people.
Yeah.
We try to make it less automated, because we want to build the most touch point to the student with human to human as much as we could, because we know our product in the end of the day is human.
Despite the fact that it's tech.
Yeah, despite
it. You want a personal feel.
Yep. Yep.
It's an interesting approach. It's a unique approach to a tech company. I think most tech CEOs would laugh at you.
Yeah.
But what you're doing works.
Yeah. Because in Thailand, we will never have enough English teacher.
Mm.
We need a lot of English teacher. We need a lot of human. And in Thailand, we never have enough people who motivate the students.
Mm-hmm.
So we need a lot of student support who consistently ask, you know, how students feel on the first class, on the sixth class, on the 12th class, on the, 30 class. Because we want to keep observing their emotion and development. Therefore, we have a lot of feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that what we should build for the first class, what we should build for the 30 class. Yeah.
So as we wrap things up here, Troy, if you could give one piece of advice to someone listening who wants to get into the business of education, what would it be?
I would say first advice would be do not try to change the system. Yeah. It's impossible to disrupt what government does. Every time people talk about education business, they try to sell things to the government. And I think all Asia is the same. You end up, getting demotivated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my advice would be you need to be very, very, very focused on who you want to help rather than what you want to build. And, education is only the bridge.
Mm.
It will never be a destination to any students. You can say that you are successful if the student speak English. You need to be sure that why the student want to speak English and what they want to be successful of.
Mm.
If you want to teach, business, then you need to have a very clear vision that what exactly is the achievement of, learning that business. If you don't have that, then you end up being one class of your bad memory when you were a kid, when it's just so boring and you want to end it in the every day when you go to school.
Mm.
Yeah, but if you know exactly, what people wanted out of that education, I think you'll be fine. Yeah.
Awesome, Troy. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you taking the time to come by today.
Yeah, thanks, Dana.
You've been listening to Beyond Performance on BFM. In this episode, we spoke with Troy Anatotai, the founder and CEO of edtech company Globish, about the business of education and how his passion to make the world a better place changed his career path from filmmaking to an entrepreneur. If you missed any of this conversation, you can find it on our website, bfm.my, our BFM app, and of course, on Spotify. You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.